Thank you. This call will now be recorded.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, let's start the meeting. First thing is, Glenn or Chuck, can you do the roll call? People here?
Shall I do it?
Yeah,
please, Glenn. Okay.
We've got Adrian Kindred, registrar, myself, Chuck Gomes, registry, Colin Lentz, staff, Kurt Fritz, staff, Cyril Chua, IPC, Craig Schwartz, staff, Avery Doria, NSR chair, non-com representative, Miriam Shapiro, Liz Williams, both staff, Olaf Nordling, staff, Vermestal observer, Marilyn Cade, observer from the DC, Mike Rodenbach, business constituency, David Maher, registry constituency, Denise Michelle, staff, and Philip Shepherd, business constituency.
And it looks like Bilal may be back in.
I think he may be, yes.
And Bilal is which constituency?
DC.
DC, okay. So we're still missing two. We're still missing ISP and NCC.
And we have got apologies from Milwaukee and apologies from Christina Rosette.
Right, okay. So that's those two. Hopefully somebody else from there will join in. Otherwise, but we should keep proceeding. Does anyone need to do a immediate interest statement update? Okay, if anyone does, please make sure you do it with Glenn so that it can go on file with the report. In terms of going over the agenda, I don't have many lines on the agenda. I basically have an open discussion on the draft that was put out on 30 July, preparatory to scheduling the council discussion and vote in the September meeting, and also going out for review. Review of the action item list just to see where we're at, if everything has been covered and what hasn't been covered is being taken care of. Check and see if there are any other issues. And then as the last thing is, do we consider ourselves done? And basically, if we answer that question, then this all reverts back to the council. If we answer that question positively, then it all reverts back to the council. If we answer that no, then we have to schedule another meeting. So any changes or recommendations about the agenda? Okay, in which case, starting the open discussion on the draft, there's basically been two major sets of comments. One from Chuck with a major set of edits. One from Christina with a major set of edits. I sent in a few comments and edits, nothing near as substantial as they did. I'd probably like to start with Liz responding to the edits, find out what we have in terms of open issues that we need to discuss, and then go into any other issues that people want to bring up. Does that start like an seem like an okay way to proceed with it?
Okay. Avery?
Yes, Liz.
Okay. I have been through Chuck and Christina's notes, and I've nearly completed inserting Chuck's edits, but then I realized that I probably needed to wait till I finalized those until I worked out whether anyone had any additional comments to make. Chuck had provided a lot of typographical things rather than substantive things, and I just wanted to make sure that nobody had any issue with me just going ahead and adopting those edits as they stood. And then the one that I was concerned about with respect to Christina's suggestion, which has come around today, was the positioning of the full text of the minority statements. And it's unfortunate that the NCUC are not yet on the call, maybe someone else, because I think that if we're going to do as Christina suggested, and you agreed with that, it means that I have to shuffle around the referencing of that, which is absolutely no problem to do, but I just prefer to hear whether anyone has any particular concerns about putting everything that looks like an additional statement into the text of Part B.
Right, and then basically in that, as I said, as one of the two components of those comments, I basically answered that personally as long as there was at each instance a pointer to be, I could probably be comfortable with it. The other possible suggestion I offered that was an intermediate to Christina's and to where you have things now is them in an endnote of some sort in A, so that they were still in the same document,
yep,
but weren't basically, I mean, I understood certainly Christina's comment about on some of them, the footnote is the entire page.
Just a point of readability, I think, Abby. I'm from a personal reader, from a personal point of view, as I said to the group earlier, I'm not happy with the way they're currently structured, but I did it that way because I had sent a note to the group saying that this was my suggestion and nobody said, that's terrible, let's do it another way. If we do change it, and I'm absolutely happy to do whatever the group wants to do, then it will just, I will just have to make sure that it all ends up in the right place and nothing is forgotten. Maybe there's two ways of doing it. One is I think that the full statement should be contained in Part B, and then if the group is happy, so that will mean that there'll be an amendment to Part B, which is a shame because it's already gone off to be HTML'd, with the webmaster in preparation for the public comment period, but I prefer to get it right rather than worry about that.
Oh, wait a second, a point of clarification. I thought you'd already included these in Part B.
No, these are
the
new ones.
The only place these were included was in the footnote.
In Part A. At the back of Part A in full, and then as a footnote wherever they're referenced in the Part A of the document. Just open it up for comment, see what people think. I mean, I'm happy to do whichever way around it goes.
I would suggest leaving them in A, but taking them out of the footnote and just putting a cross-reference to where they are in A.
So okay. You're talking about an appendix or an annex to Part A?
Yep. And there is already one there. The glossary is already there as an annex. And so the glossary of terms is already there. So that's not a problem for me to do it.
And then you could do what Christina had suggested and, you know, put a big, bold, flashing sign at the top saying, these are minority statements, so, you know, no one takes, or comment, as it may be, so nobody takes them as inline text.
Sure.
And then just as every time you mention that NCUC had an objection, you have a cross-link, and then in the HTML, of course, that's no problem, because then it becomes a proper cross-reference. Anybody wants it, they just click on it.
Yeah, exactly.
And for people reading it in PDF, they just know to go to the end and, you know, page 24, et cetera.
In that case, I think, Avery, I think that's a great suggestion, because, frankly, that would leave alone Part B, which I've done a lot of work on last week, and I've tried to give the webmaster team as much notice as possible, because Part B itself is a very big live document that needs to be posted for the public comment period so that anyone who's interested and wants to go back has the full set of information in front of them. I was actually anxious to make sure that happened. Do I hear it right then and say...
Yes, if I could, and apologize for this Liz, because it goes against the thing you just said, but at least at least want to raise the question. Especially in the case of the NCUC, because we do have constituency statements in Part B, should their minority statements be included in Part B along with their constituency statements? And I don't have strong feelings there. I want to ask the question so we can talk about it.
Okay. I tend to think they're more relevant to the recommendations than they are, but, you know, anyone else?
I'm okay with that, so...
Does anyone want to speak to that issue? Does anybody not think it's acceptable to include these in A but not as footnotes? Just as cross-referencing. Does anybody object to doing it that way? No, we haven't heard from NCUC, but...
Avery, could I make a suggestion then? If you like, I'll try to get in touch with Robin by phone after the call today and just... see if I can get her or Milton or Milwaukee or one of the NCUC guys to just make sure that they're happy with it, because after this document is probably not going to come back to the committee again, because if everyone's happy with it, then I'll make sure that it's getting prepared for the public comment period.
By and large, I do think that we have, though, sort of broad support for doing it that way.
Okay.
So hopefully, you know,
yep.
they can be. I mean, I think it's a good idea to talk to them. I don't say that they should be railroaded on it, but
sure.
It is a readability thing. It is really difficult.
Yeah.
On
okay.
the ones where it uses up the whole page.
Yeah,
just so that everyone's
fact,
clear, because perhaps not everyone's been through it, I have put in Annex A the NCU statement about Recommendation 6, in Annex B is Avery's comment, and in Annex C is Recommendation 20 and Implementation Guideline F, H and P. So they are included in full already, and I can make some relatively simple changes for footnoting within the body of the document.
Yeah, and it's not a matter just of being one full page. It's actually more than one page.
Yeah,
that,
it is.
That they
mm-hmm.
cover, and I don't think it's acceptable to leave it the way it is, because it is really a readability problem, not only from the reading the footnotes, but even more so the continuity from where the
yeah.
footnote starts to the next item.
Yeah.
And while it may be visible on paper, I only read it online. But online, even though I knew what was going on, it was confusing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think if no one on the call objects, I mean, I think we should, you know, socialize it with the NCUC, as we say, but I think since there's been no other objection to doing it that way, and as I say, as long as it's a good, you know, a good reference and in the HTML version, a proper working hyperlink, I just don't see the issue.
Okay.
In the HTML version, the footnote would have been an HTML link anyway.
Yeah. Okay, Abby, just so that was clear then, I will leave them as an annex and I will change the footnotes so that they don't fit in as a page of text. And I'll do that later today.
Right, and yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Done. Okay, thank you.
And as I say, if when it's HTML that they can be made properly.
Yeah, they will be.
Right, proper cross-reference links. Okay.
Yeah.
Going on then, I don't know if you were done. We were on that one issue.
Yes, I just wanted to just double-check with everybody that they had read Chuck's edits and that there was not any issue with any of it. I didn't see any as I've gone through them all. And I also just wanted to ask the same question about the edits that Christina has submitted. Would you mind if I just opened that question to everybody on the group? Because if no one has any objection,
I'll
incorporate them.
I certainly don't mind you opening the question. I'm wondering, Chuck, you had flagged a couple as being ones that you wanted to make sure everybody thought about. Did you consider it worth just quickly walking through them at the moment and then explicitly asking everybody whether they thought they were fine?
Yeah,
or are you fine with doing a blanket statement?
Sure. Let me do that. I highlighted them in the document that I attached, the ones that I thought were had a little bit more substance to them. The first one was on page 10, paragraph 13, where the second sentence says, the committee has opted to enable potential applicants to self-select strings that are either the most appropriate for their customers or potentially most lucrative for the string manager. And as I recall, I don't remember us talking about the idea of strings being lucrative. I'm sure we all realize that's the case. But I didn't think it was good for us to say it that way, so I suggested wording it this way. The committee has opted to enable potential applicants to self-select strings that are either the most appropriate for their customers or potentially most marketable.
Does anyone have any issue with that one? I want to discuss anything on it. Does it seem fine to everyone? Anyone object? Okay, go with it.
All right, page 23 then, another one that I highlighted as having a little bit more substance in terms of change. Paragraph 3 reads, this policy development process has been designed to produce systemized and ongoing mechanisms for applicants to propose new top-level domains. After the first round of new applications, the application system will be evaluated by ICANN's TLD's project office to assess the effectiveness of the application system. Success metrics will be developed and any necessary adjustments made to the process for subsequent rounds. And then I commented that it's been a long time to discuss this, so it seems to me that we had, at some point, we had agreed that there was a second round, and timing for a second round was supposed to be communicated when the first round is started. And I don't think that's anywhere in the document. Now, it's certainly consistent with Principle A, which is the idea of orderly, timely, and predictable manner. I didn't suggest any particular edit in this particular case, but is my memory correct there? And the staff, if it is staff aware that we are supposed to, at the start of the first round, announce a proposed date for the second round?
Chuck, hi, this is Craig. And what you're saying is consistent with what our approach to this has been, that in the RFP will contain information about when subsequent rounds may begin, so that it's an intent to communicate right at the onset what the future game plan will look like.
Then it sounds like that's okay. The only question is do we need anything in this document? And again, I don't feel strongly that we do. I wanted to make sure that we didn't lose that point.
You mean something in this document giving an explicit date? Or
No. Just saying that all I would be talking about, and again, I can live either way with this, but it would be a simple statement that says that subsequent information about timing of subsequent rounds will be included in the RFP. Something like that is all. But
okay.
Again, I'm not demanding that be in there. I just wanted to raise it. It sounds like staff's on top of it. That's the most important thing. So I'm open to whatever people want to do in that regard.
So what? I'm sorry, I missed it. So Craig, what are you suggesting we do there?
I don't know if Craig suggested we do anything there, except he's telling us that staff plans in the RFP to include information about subsequent rounds.
So does it make sense to say that in our document?
This is Werner. Can I speak to the subject?
Please.
Yes. The reason why I've repeatedly gone in front of the mic numerous times in the public forums since 2002 on this very subject that Chuck has raised is the fact that if you give the impression that there is not much focus on the follow-on rounds, and they're going to come sometime, you know, who knows, and first we're going to develop metrics and that kind of thing, people will take this as an indication that nothing is less certain that even a second round in due time will exist. And they will rush on the only available round with badly prepared applications because they have no other choice. They cannot even afford to think that, yes, let's maybe, you know, wait for another round. So I do think that this an indication in this recommendation document should be about the fact that, you know, the process is designed to the, from the beginning.
Somebody should be on mute. Go on, Porter.
Okay, that we should give the indication in the description of the process that there's always more than one round going to be, you know, timed, so that people know where they're at, and they're not going to have to be worried about round being pushed off at calendar Grecus, so to speak.
Why don't we just add a sentence to this paragraph that says something like, the RFP for the first round will include information about scheduling of subsequent rounds.
Sounds good to me. Does anyone object to doing that? Liz, are you comfortable with adding that sentence?
Yes, Chuck, I was just making an amendment somewhere else. Just read it again, please, so I can write it down.
Okay. The RFP for the first round will include scheduling information for subsequent rounds.
Yep, thanks.
Can I speak to that?
Yes, please.
Chuck, whilst I certainly support that terminology, I just wonder whether it's whether it's a little bit of a nothing statement in the way that it's currently worded, because we're not really saying anything. Information about scheduling could be, for example, there will be ICANN commits to subsequent rounds of new TLDs, full stop. And that is addressing scheduling, where it's not being specific as far as timing. I don't know how you get around that, but it just seems to me in its current form to be a little wishy-washy, and I don't know whether it serves a purpose one way or the other.
I'm open to suggestions for beefing it up a little bit, because we really did agree that, a second round would be targeted for specific time frame at the start of the first round, and it's to deal primarily with, or at least one of the key issues is the one that Werner raised, that we want to deal with. So
yeah, is there a way to maybe say no greater than or no longer than a certain period of time? So ICANN will address subsequent rounds within a certain time frame. Are you able to be so bold?
Marilyn, can I ask a question about this particular point?
Please.
What I remember, Adrian, is in the discussion about. So there's two concerns. First of all, will there be predictability, and is there assurance to the community that there will be subsequent rounds? But secondly, I wonder, and maybe we could ask the operational staff who are on to comment on this. Let's just say that they got 50 applications in the first round, and they could literally be consumed for a year working on those before being able to announce the second round. I don't know if the board would be able to guarantee a date certain. That's
good.
Why I'd like the
suggestion. But to this point, you kind of have to address that. You kind of have to put the pressure and the onus back upon the board to deal with these things in a prompt manner. You can certainly open for applications up. You don't have to have resolved all previous ones.
Yeah.
Can I speak to that also? This is Werner.
Yeah. Anyone else want to be on the queue on this one? Anyone from staff want to make a comment on this while we're talking about it? Okay, Werner, go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The first reason is that in the absence of the announced previous, the announced follow-on round, we're almost certain that we're ending up with a self-fulfilling prophecy of having lots of issues to deal with. There is follow-on rounds. Many people will be happy to push their application off to the follow-on round just for their own timing reasons. The second reason is that, as you know, we already know from the previous experience, that maybe dealing with the applications may take a little time for one and much time for another, and we are able to work in parallel, specifically if things have piled up and we have a certain backlog of some things. Well, in that time, additional staff can be, and experts and whatever can be hired. They deal with that stuff while, on a date certain, the next round goes ahead. So I would actually favor, firm dates that the application or the RFP will include a firm date for at least one follow-on round. It should be a firm date.
I'm not sure about a firm. By firm date, you mean September 7th? Or, you mean a specific number? Because it seems to me that theoretically, my gut feeling says within 6 months would be good. So I'm wondering whether we can say within a year and have that be enough.
That's exactly where I was thinking.
Is that correct that in 1 year will be the maximum and 6 months
right,
will be kind of the hope?
Within 1 year, right, that a new one would happen within 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is staff okay with that from an implementation point of view?
I think we need to talk about that before we connect.
Okay, well, that could certainly be something that, we put in the policy that we think it should be within one, and then the staff can come back and say, you guys got to be nuts.
I agree. That's a good point.
Okay, so are we agreed that from a policy point of view we want to say within 1 year? Does anybody object to saying with one year from a policy perspective?
So this is Kurt. I'm sorry, Aubrey. I dropped off for a couple of seconds. So 1 year from when?
1 year from when we're putting out the RFP for the first one.
And actually, let me throw this out as a compromise, I think, in what you're getting at there, Kurt. I don't think it would be bad if it was 1 year from the start of the application process rather than 1 year from the start of the four-month period.
Yeah, Audrey, it's Marilyn. I think that's I think the guidance we're trying to give also needs to be achievable because we're trying to achieve predictability.
Well, wouldn't the next RFP also have a four-month announcement?
I would think so. My concern is most of the learning is going to come from the dispute resolution process, which will occur, you know, if the whole process takes a year, you know, to get through the dispute resolution, process, then there's some time for making adjustments in the process after that. So I'm, you know, obviously I'm supposed to be the one that's concerned with it being too short, but you know, a year from the date of the initial RFP, you've got a couple months there for responses and then a couple months there for, you know, 2 to 3 months for going through the initial evaluation process. And then if you're, you know, 7 months for all the dispute resolution, there's no time left for considering the results of that process and then feeding it back into potential changes in the policy. Either in the policy or in the implementation of the policy.
Can I speak to that, Mrs. Brenner?
Yeah.
I think the danger to be in here is you try to make everything so predictable that nothing will be. If you want to feed back the dispute resolution process into the next round, we're doing something that does more damage than whatever the feedback is going to help. If you know that the thing has been held up with dispute resolution, that's a really thing to know. And we may have more things that are going to be held up with dispute resolution. Whatever we add to the process will probably not avoid those types of dispute resolutions. Maybe it makes things a little bit clearer. Who knows? But those who apply, they know what on what risk they will apply. So I don't think that's going to change. Their biggest damage is not to be able to apply. And then they basically have no other choice to go in the bad way with a badly prepared thing the first time. So basically end up with a self-fulfilling prophecy as to how difficult things will be. And we did not have to do it like that. We stage parallel processes, and they would be the easiest.
Anyone else wish to comment?
Yeah, this is Denise. I think there's a compromise here that will, I think, meet the objectives that have been articulated. The committee has also been very clear that after the first round of applications, we want to assess how the process has been carried out and make any necessary changes. So I think we can make it very clear that at the time the first RFP is issued, that we make it very clear that the second round will be coming as well. And I think it's incumbent on staff to come back to the committee or the council and lay out the process and timeline in more detail. And give you a sense of how the whole first application process would work, including an assessment period and how that would be how that would then feed back into proposed changes to the application process and launch a second round.
Yeah, if I Aubrey, can I add something here?
Sure.
I think one of the important things is that we don't see the evaluation process as needing to be serially scheduled. In other words, we don't have to wait till everything or even most things are most applications are completed to start the evaluation process. Much of that, there's no reason why much of that cannot occur while the process is ongoing. And if we approach it that way, I think we'll avoid excessive delays for subsequent rounds and still get a lot of good improvements built in.
Yeah, I guess I tend to agree with you. You know, I tend to look at it like a Gantt chart with some things are begin-end, some things overlap, some things are end-end, and that in this case, yes, we do an evaluation of the application process after applications have ended, and we do evaluations of how some of the more difficult dispute processes go. And some of the dispute processes may not be over in a year. And that, okay, those won't have been evaluated by the time we start a new one, but I have a feeling that the dispute process evaluation will be ongoing. And also, it would be a good indicator to people that, gee, you really don't want to be controversial about your applications because it gets stuck. So I guess I'm personally in favor of putting our recommendation at a year for the next recommendations and seeing what the staff, you know, can recommend in terms of a schedule that fits in within that policy recommendation.
Avery, Adrian, if I can add some supplementary information to that.
Sure.
I think that we've seen, especially at the public forums, a lot of the new TLD potential applicants that have clean-cut applications, what they consider, and have been sort of at the throat of ICANN to, you know, just hurry up and do the process for the ones that are going to be clearly go through. I think you don't want to be retarding them or future versions of them. So to sort of support what you just said then, I think that we have to assume there's going to be some ongoing disputes and processes. But at the same time, we should keep, you know, make sure that we have a strict structure around to handle those applications that are going to go straight through, that aren't controversial, and that will, I guess, streamline the process.
Can I speak to Tony Harris?
Sure. Hi, Tony.
I just want to support what's just been said. I think that's the way to go.
Okay, thank you. I'm glad you're here. Okay, so does anyone want to say anything further on basically the sentence that Chuck recommended, that the RFP of the first round will include schedule? I guess you gave a specific line to Liz, and Liz, did you capture that line?
Yep, I did.
Okay.
And I'll just read it back to Chuck to make sure he's happy with it. The RFP for the first round will include scheduling information for subsequent rounds within the year.
To occur within a year?
Yep.
That's fine. And feel free to wordsmith it so that it says, yeah, that's fine, but the intent's there.
Yep, proper English is a good thing.
Yep.
Got it. Okay, thanks. Chuck, we're still in your issues.
Yes. Okay. Let me. I was going over to the meeting request form. Here we go. Okay. Page 46. RN Working Group Recommendation 12, tag names at the top level. Now, we kind of covered this for Recommendations 13 and 14, which are for the second and third level. But we didn't do it for the top level, and I think that it would be useful to do it there. And basically what we have is we're reserving all tag names at the top level. But there's actually an exception to that that we don't comment on, and that is obviously for a new IDN TLD to be introduced, we're going to have to allow a tag name in the DNS, okay? Obviously, it'll have gone through the process. So I just suggested adding a parenthetical that says, note in the cases where an IDN gTLD is approved, the corresponding ASCII string that starts with the currently accepted IDNA prefix, and then parens XN dash dash as of August 2007, will be allowed. Just to clarify, I think all of us understand that. Obviously, we understand it, or we wouldn't be moving forward with this, because that would eliminate the possibility of IDN TLDs. But people that aren't don't understand IDNs well, or otherwise wouldn't, and this is just a clarification that would be put in there.
Chuck, it's Luke here. Could I just ask a clarifying question, please?
Sure.
Chuck, I was just going to insert that in the table. Like I did, because the reserve name stuff
fine.
Is all captured in the table. If that's okay with you, that's what I was going to do.
Yeah, I think that's a good place for it, Liz.
Okay, rather than in a footnote?
I would probably be comfortable either way, but I think in the table's fine.
Okay,
I heard back from Patrick. He thought, and Patrick, of course, as most of you know, worked very hard with us on the reserve name working group, and he thought that it was fine, the change. I never did hear back from Carrie. I don't know if you did.
Yes, I did. Thank you.
Okay.
I have.
Good.
You hear me? It's Carrie.
Oh, hi, Carrie.
Oh, hi, Carrie.
Hi. Can I comment on what Chuck just said? And that's on this U-label, A-label terminology that we'd like to render everyone conversant with. Can't we use that here as well? these references to XN-tagged labels, ASCII-compatible encoding. That's the kind of stuff that we'd like this to move away from.
Yeah, as long as they're in the glossary.
Well, again, I mean, if we agree that the A-label-U-label dichotomy is an appropriate way to describe this, I think we should apply it consistently wherever we
mm-hmm.
declare the definition.
Well, but those terms, Kerry, don't talk specifically about the tag, and that's what we're talking about here, reserving any tag names.
It's tautological. An A label is a sequence that starts with XN dash X.
I'm okay with using that language. I actually think that the way that it's, that I worded it, probably the average person is going to be able to figure it out more readily than the other, but I have no objection to modifying the language that way.
Well, this is Kurt. This is Kurt. I think if you go with Kurt's idea, you should use both. So the document explains. It's okay for the document to explain the terminology as it uses it. I think.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Good.
I think it's fine to say a label that is.
No.
Yeah. I.e. Yeah. Good. That's fine.
Does that work for you, Carrie?
Yeah. Keep in mind that an awful lot of getting IDM to work is going to be pedagogical. That the people have to become comfortable with the notion that an IDN is two labels immutably linked to each other by some algorithmic process that they don't need to understand,
mm-hmm.
and getting everybody accommodated to the notion of seeing them as A label, U label pairs is ultimately going to make that easier.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. So I think following, you know, the suggestion that we use the terminology that is correct. But until such time as these words come trippingly off of everybody's tongue, we also explain them when we use them. And also make sure they're in the glossary.
Avery, it's Liz here. Did you mean
yeah.
the glossary of terms in the back of Part A, or did you mean the IDN glossary? Because there are two things there.
I think it would have to be in the glossary at the back of A.
Okay, that's
if we
fine.
Use a term in A,
yep.
then we need to explain it in A.
Yep, terrific. And just a second, I'm just taking notes whilst Kerry and Chuck were speaking. Kerry, just a quick question for you. The parenthetical, actually perhaps Kerry, I could speak to you later because I just want to make sure that I've got the language exactly correct to capture what you've said. I have received your notes, and I just wondered if I could do that offline. Avery, if you don't mind, I can just save the group
certainly.
Time by doing that.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask a quick question there, Liz. It seems to me that you replace ASCII string with A label, right?
Yep.
Is that all that's involved?
Yes, Chuck, it is in this instance, but there were several things that Kerry had sent to me separately about the IDN questions in the report, so I could add as a bulk lot
okay,
with
right,
Kerry later.
Thanks.
Is that all right with you?
Yep.
No problem.
Okay, Chuck.
Page 47, the same category, tag names, except at the second and third level, are in working group recommendations 14 and 15. I just suggested adding parentheticals so that it's more generic, because and we should follow Kerry's suggestion in this as well. I said, note that names starting with XN dash dash may only be used if the current IDN ICANN guidance are followed by the registry. What all I was trying to do there is change it to say the currently accepted IDN tag. Now, some IDN experts don't think that tag's likely to change, but if it did, we want our language to be properly worded so that whatever the currently accepted IDN tag is,
mm-hmm.
the prefix for the A label would be the ones that we're talking about.
A brief observation on that, if I may. Changing the tag will have such significant effects straight up and down the line that the document, as we're currently drafting it, probably would need wholesale replacement in any case.
I'm not so sure. As long as we keep pointing to the IDN guidelines and don't try to be explicit about what they are, and whether the tag changes or not, is really an IETF level issue, not an ICANN level issue.
But it's sure going to have resounding complications and implications if it ever happens.
Yeah, and there's those of us in the IETF that think that if it doesn't happen, we're going to have resounding confusion, so we might as well stay out of it in this phone call. You know, because it's not really relevant. As long as we say in this document that the policy document that we have to follow the IDN guidelines, then they can change, but the policy remains consistent. You know, and we leave out any of the technical discussions that may or may not happen in the IETF, you know, out of consideration.
All I was trying to do on this one is just make sure that if on the remote chance or not remote chance, whoever's opinion you want, that it ever does change, that our language just is properly worded. That's all I was trying to do. I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on that.
I agree.
Okay, page 62, paragraph 7I reads, this recommendation is supported by the majority of GNSO constituencies. And for other recommendations, the wording is slightly different. Let me just talk about this one off the cuff instead of reading what I submitted. For consistency throughout the document, I think it's important how we describe the level of support. And different words are used in different places without definition. The one I refer to here says there's majority support. Other places it says there's broad support. Others it says supported by all GNSO's constituencies except. I don't necessarily favor one over the other. I just think we should be consistent and make sure that there's a definition for what we're saying if it is needed. Now, obviously, if it says supported by all GNSO constituencies except, that's pretty clear. So my suggestion here was that throughout that we are consistent in for each one of the recommendations, as well as the implementation guidelines and principles, in terms of the language we use to describe the level of support to make it clear.
Yeah, I would recommend that we use. I think they all have broad support. I don't think there's any reason to ever use majority support, which I would believe is a lesser criteria. So I believe that if we constrain ourselves to broad support, unanimous, and all but, I think we've got it covered. I don't know if you do.
That may be fine. What do others think?
Everyone, can I just ask a quick question? Chuck, thank you very much for picking that up, because we've run into some definitional problems, because when Avery and I were doing the PDP for the contractual conditions, we used different terminology, and then we used different terminology again, for example, in the Protecting the Rights of Others working group, and others and other chairmen have determined and defined things differently. So whatever you come up with, I think given that the only things that did not have unanimous support were Recommendation 6 and Recommendation 20, isn't it clearer to say the recommendations were supported by all GNSO constituencies? Except...
And all but.
Yes, and all but, the all but, because then we don't even have to use the adjective broad or unanimous.
I think that's clearer.
Works for me.
Is that all right, everyone?
Yeah, it works for me too.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Okay, in that case, I'll go through and I'll just pick that up, and it'll just mean lots of adjective taking out.
Yeah. And by the way, I think this will be very helpful for the board, because in some of my conversations with individual board members on the new TLD recommendations in San Juan, you know, a few of them were kind of, pleased to hear, but surprised that there's very strong support in the GNSO for these recommendations. And so the clearer we can be on that, I think it will help a little bit.
Just for clarity then, Avery, I'll describe it as all but in everything except Recommendation 6 and Recommendation 20, and then that calls out the minority statements. There's only one tricky part here, Avery, which is how I refer to you in your personal comments, because if you read the report, it says something along the lines of this recommendation was supported by all GMFA constituencies and Ms. Doria in her personal comments, or you supported it with concern, or you accepted it with concern. Now, you've provided that definition of your personal comments.
But right, and that's in my personal statement there.
Yeah, exactly. Are you happy with what you've read so far that stands at
the
start?
Yes, I was happy with the way you designated my stuff.
Okay, thanks.
And
just to be clear.
Actually, the all but language works even on 6 and 20, except we have a but there.
Exactly. Exactly. No problem.
Liz,
I'll make that change.
Liz, it's Marilyn. Can I just ask a question to you and Aubrey and others? Is it individual comments or personal comments? Because, you know...
It's from constituencies except from me and could have been from John Bing, who, as NOMCOM appointees,
right.
only have personal comments. I mean, more individual or personal, it's the same, but...
Marilyn, were you asking a different question about whether
I was asking that question because we are publishing something in an international forum, and I guess my point was, you know, sometimes people think that personal comments would be Marilyn Cade speaking in her personal capacity as opposed to in her role. That was, and this is, you know, I think you're speaking, Aubrey, if I'm not mistaken, in the role of a nominating committee appointee.
Right. So, but you know,
I hear you. I just it can be misunderstood in some international settings. I just wanted to raise it as a.
So you're saying it should be an individual comment as opposed to a personal comment?
I think so because personal means it's not in your official role.
Okay. I understand what you're saying, Liz. Whatever word works, you think works best.
Yep, I'll do that. I understand what you're getting at, Marilyn. Thanks. That's helpful clarification.
Certainly, just on the same point, I mean, it does also open up, I don't know what we've done in the past, if we've captured by personal name. I mean, supposing we've got all three nominating committee representatives making a particular comment, is our normal style to indeed capture those by name when we're referring by institution to the constituencies, or would we capture them by who they are, being nominating committee appointees? And it may be clearer you do that if it's in the representative capacity, and only use name when it's in a personal capacity. Whatever we do, we just need to be consistent with the way that we capture these comments in this report and others.
Just a quick follow-up there on that one, Philip. It's been quite a tricky divining exercise on this one. And in some of the footnotes, I did refer explicitly to the transition between Bruce as chair and Avery and her term and how it was all, so that a reader, if they really wanted to get to the bottom of it, would be able to understand who was doing what, so that Avery clearly had taken over as the chair and she would be making, we'll use the word individual comments, but I think that some clarity around the language is helpful. Wherever I have received a constituency point of view, for example, from you, I've assumed that it's not just Philip Shepherd speaking, that it's Philip Shepherd as in his role as a business constituency rapporteur
right.
in this particular exercise. So, and just to be very clear so that everyone knows, the nominating committee members were asked individually if they would like to submit comments, and Avery was the only one that did. If the others had wished to, then they could have easily done that if they wanted to. So I haven't referred specifically to anything, for example, from John in his discussions about international law and enforceability and all of the things that he's interested in. I haven't captured that in the text because he hasn't specifically asked me to do that.
And Aubrey, that's the end of the comments that I wanted
okay,
to
great.
Call out. The rest
Thank
of
you.
Them, I think, are all fairly trivial.
Yeah, the rest of them were very much. Okay, do we want to walk through Christina's? Was there?
I think except for the one comment that we've already discussed.
They were all editorial.
They were all editorial.
Yeah,
that's correct, Aubrey.
I had only one comment that I think wasn't editorial. And maybe even it was editorial. I had sent it, in fact, a couple of my editorials I just sent directly to Liz, you know, the letters being backwards in the Hebrew name and such. And that was my issue with the placement of recommendation 20 under term of reference 4. So perhaps that, and I put a blonde under term of reference 3. And I know that wasn't in numerical order because term of reference 4 referred to contractual conditions and 3 concerned to sort of the allocation methods and procedures. And 20, having been a relocated 11, really belonged, I thought, more with term of reference 3 than 4. And I don't know if anyone else cared, if I was being pedantic, whether it should be moved, but it just seemed that way to me.
Actually, I think it's a good catch, Aubrey, because if we look at it from the point of view of totally new people coming in and looking at this, I think it's better that it be in the appropriate place. Otherwise, it might cause confusion.
It certainly confused me when I saw it. I said, wait a second. Wait. I went back to thinking about the terms of reference, and it just does it make sense to other people that we move it to term of reference 3, even though the numerical order will be obvious, but I think it's better than renumbering that it just be listed in its proper place. Does anyone else have an opinion? Liz, do you have one?
If we shifted it, the way I've structured the document is that it ties together terms of reference with recommendations underneath in specific sections.
Yep.
I think that if you did shift it from recommendation 20, it would actually bugger up the arrangement. But what I suggest we could possibly do is look under term of reference 3 and say, this does relate to allocation. Recommendation 20, which was a new recommendation, does relate to allocation methods. And just in the same way that you referred to recommendation 11, which said this has been removed, but we're not renumbering it because of all the cross-referencing problems it would create. We could probably do it that way if you wished.
But why wouldn't you move it from the term of reference 4 chapter to the term of reference 3 chapter?
And still have it numbered recommendation 20?
Oh, yes, most definitely.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought you were trying to
No. I'm keeping numbering strictly fixed.
Oh,
all
sure.
I was talking
in that case,
about
absolutely
was
no
relocating
problem.
It in the document.
No problem. I can shift it. Absolutely no problem.
Does anyone think this is a bad idea? Okay, great. Then, thanks. Are there any other issues that haven't come up either in Chuck or Christina or my notes that we need to cover on this document before we believe it's ready to send on to public comment and then on to the council from there?
Hi, Avery, this is Uta. I may have a comment, but first I have a question. I know that neither Christina nor Steve can be on this call, so I just wanted to come back to the reference of the Rights of Others Working Group, which is on,
yes,
I think, page 32 of the document, where it says, in the middle of the paragraph, mechanisms that may inform potential new TLD applicants. I know that Steve in particular wanted to know where exactly in the report there is a reference to the need for new applicants to have some sort of mechanism. But I suppose this was the assumption for the work of the Rights of Others Working Group that there would have to be a mechanism. And where is this?
Well, actually, I thought that the conclusion had never been that there had to be,
mm-hmm,
but that it was something that one certainly had to consider putting in, but I thought that we had in the conversations gotten to the point where there was never full agreement that every applicant had to, that it was advisable that they do, but not that they had to. And I believe
that's the correct characterization of it, Avery, and that's what the Rights Protection Mechanism little ad hoc group, which meets on a Friday every Tuesday on its second Tuesday, to develop some reference implementation guidelines. And Uta, just for you, I don't remember that you were actually in the room when this discussion came about in San Juan. I can't remember if you were there or not, but Christina and Mike Rodenbach, I think Mike's on the call, he can speak to that group more clearly because he and Christina and I were on the phone last week. And if Steve wants to provide different text to what's in the document, then that's fine. But I'm pretty sure that we're on the right wavelength here with our, how it is.
Yeah. So I just wonder, I could imagine that the formula that may inform potential new TLD applicants has been, is the result of careful consideration. Is there any room to change that to for potential new TLD applicants in place of that may inform potential new TLD applicants?
Okay, this is the language specifically on what page?
Page 32, the second full, no, the first full paragraph, the 1, 2, 6 line down into that paragraph, where currently it reads on rights protection mechanisms that may inform potential new TLD applicants. Would it be acceptable to change that to on rights protection mechanisms for potential new TLD applicants?
Now, what paragraph was that again?
The first full paragraph on page 32.
Paragraph 6?
Paragraph 6 is being referred to.
And then could you state that again, Uta? Sorry.
Yes, if you look at, it's sort of in the last third of that full first paragraph on that page. The line starts with on rights protection mechanisms that may inform potential new TLD applicants.
Okay.
Would it be acceptable to change that to on rights protection mechanisms for potential new TLD applicants?
So, but that makes it read all of the protection mechanisms.
Heather, would you just say that again? You broke up in the middle.
Basically, my understanding form would basically be indicating that, that everyone did need to include a rights protection mechanism.
I haven't necessarily read it that way, but I would just think that that may inform, on, to the contrary, indicates that there could not possibly be a requirement.
It's not a requirement at all. Uta,
right.
To be clear, that is actually what the group determined. There was no agreement that it would be an obligatory requirement at all. And that's why it says may, that applicants may use the information that comes out of the reference implementation guidelines to help them in the application evaluation process to describe what rights protection mechanism they may choose. And they also indeed might say that none of those mechanisms that have been supplied as reference implementation guidelines would suit that particular business model.
Or that a particular business model, as I remember it was brought up, or that a particular model of TLD may not require any because it was just, you know, members of the Doria family.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful information.
Any other comments? Changes, corrections, things we need to do to this document. Okay, that's good. So now, Liz, well, how does this, I mean, this has been some fairly substantial modifications to your document. How long
you know,
Abby,
that's fine. Just so that everybody was aware, I had sent around a note that we would try to start the public comment period on the 9th of August. You and I had discussed this last week, Avery, to run for 20 days between the 9th and the 29th.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that I can turn around, because I've nearly completed Chuck's amendments, except for those substantive things that he talked about today. I only received Christina's, like, a couple of minutes before the meeting, and... Yeah, Avery, I only received yours.
At the meeting, yes.
Yeah, that's right. So, and I've got to speak to Kerry after this. He's just sent me a note to ask him if I can speak to him after. So I'll do that to make sure the IDN stuff is correct. What I'm going to aim to do, because I can't speak for the webmasters team as to how quickly they could turn this into an HTML document that could be used for public comment period. They already have Part B, and that's well underway, so that the basket of documents that can be provided to potential public commenters would be really substantial, and if people wanted to use it, they can. I'm going to aim for having this turned around by the end of the day tomorrow. I have the Ad Hoc Rights Protection Mechanism group meeting tomorrow afternoon. So if I was able to do that, then I can get that off to the webmaster guys as soon as possible. But we have to structure the public comments, and I think, Craig, you're on the call and can confirm this tonight. We're having a new TLDs implementation team meeting, and we have been putting together some ideas about how we get the best value out of the public comment period. So that's a long-winded way of saying I'll do my best to turn it around immediately with everybody's changes, which immediately means at the end of the day tomorrow. And then I'll work with Craig and the other guys on the public comment period and how to structure that. And then I'll work with Mark Salvatierra to make his job as easy as possible to turn Part A into a pure HTML document that can be posted for use for the public comment period. I would imagine, but I'm not going to promise this because I can't predict what other people will do, is that by the 10th the public comment period will be open, which is the day, Avery, that we thought that may have slipped to anyway. So given that there are some substantial changes that the group would like to make, which I think are better for the document, that's what I'll be aiming for.
Okay, anybody have any issues with that schedule? I mean, it seems like the best one could possibly hope for.
Yeah, and that would give us 1 week at the end of the comment period before the GNSO Council meeting when we act on it.
Oh, yes, thank you for reminding me, Chuck. One of the things that I promised Avery that I would do is when a public comment period runs, I look at it a couple of times a day to see what's going on and who's putting things in, so that, and I undertook to provide Avery as quickly as possible after the public comment period had ended a synopsis of the public comments so that the council members could have a synopsis of those public comments prior to them taking the vote, prior to the council taking the vote on the 6th of September. So I was going to put that into a special little format, and those have to be included anyway in the board report, so it's certainly not something that, you know, is just only going to be done for one purpose, but that was my intention, to do that whilst the public comment period was running.
Okay, thanks. Do appreciate all you're putting into this.
Thank you. My fourth child, Avery. I've got to be kind to
her. I see, when's the christening? No.
No.
Okay. So any other comments on the text of this before we move on to the items we need to do? I thank everybody for the reviews and the comments and discussion. Okay.
Avery, would you mind if I just had one last comment, if you don't mind? Given that I am making these changes on behalf of everybody, if anyone has anything that they want to get to me overnight, I'm happy to include it. If someone picks something up, I mean, there's no point not including it if it would help the document be better. And I'll be beavering on it all day, so if anyone wants to send me something that they think I've missed or that someone else has missed, then pop it in to me.
Okay, great, thanks.
And we ought to restrict that to non-material sorts of
things. Oh, typos, Chuck,
yes.
Or whatever. But it will be proofed anyway. Before the end of the day, it will be proofed properly, being read and proofed properly.
Okay, great. Okay, now the next thing I had on the schedule was just a quick go-through on all our tasks here to make sure that we were getting everything we were supposed to get done. And obviously the main item is in Liz's hands at the moment and has been for a while. But basically, I don't think I've sent one of these out since the last meeting. Basically, we've done everything we had to do with resolving recommendations. We've held all the discussions on any open implementation issues that were there. Did we ever get all the feedback on the reserved names for new GTLDs on the IANA and ICANN names?
I think that's done.
It is done.
Yeah, I thought it was. I just didn't have it marked as done.
It's been
done
for a while for new TLDs.
Yep. Okay. The final draft has been updated.
So wait 1 second. On the ICANN names, I understood we were still going to be sending out requests on that?
Mike, we're talking about just for new TLD names right now. The recommendation is the reservation requirement stands as it was.
Correct.
That has nothing to do with the fact that some additional work is going to be done, and we'll be updating that probably in the council meeting on Thursday with regard to, I think Patrick's coming back with some stuff that staff is working on in that regard. That doesn't mean that down the road in you know, 4 months from now, if some changes are made that they couldn't be, that the new TLD process couldn't be updated, but for right now, so that we have a in place recommendation there, it remains as stands.
I think it's pretty safe bet to say that, yeah, for this first round, this is where it's going to stand, certainly on the top levels. And we just finished now the final review of U.S. typos or whatever can get to Liz today, but by and large, we're done. The only other pending thing was the report in the middle of October on the working group dealing with references, but that will go to council, not here. So as far as I can tell, we have finished our work. Liz still has certainly a bunch to do, but that this committee has basically finished. Does anyone think that that's not a correct statement? No? In which case, does anyone else, can anyone point to anything? Okay, I guess not. I guess that includes the answer to no. No one can point to anything that we still have to do that I have forgotten to list. That includes you, Chuck, right?
Right.
Nothing you can think of that we haven't done, because you're usually good at thinking of the things that we forgot to do.
I think we're in good shape.
Okay. Is there any other business on the new TTLB committee that anyone wants to bring up at this point?
Abby, it's Liz. A vote of thanks.
Yeah,
okay.
To everyone.
Yes,
please.
The amount of work that has gone for you, for the, everyone, for Bruce, who set the initial tone and did the majority of the work, it's been amazing.
And just a comment, you know, the way we've incorporated in observers and let them participate, I think worked very effectively in the last year and a half plus. And so I think a compliment to the observers and those who, so many of them that constructively contributed, even on our call today, I think that's great.
Yeah, I agree. I also want to thank, I mean, not only Liz, who has done now the monumental lifting on this particular project, but also the immense amount of work that the rest of the staff has done to sort of keep up with our ever-evolving thought and, you know, what they perhaps less kindly called the moving target, but I've certainly called it that, too. I think that the way they've, you know, attempted to keep incorporating our new thinking into their thinking has been wonderful. So, all that having been said, can this new GTLD committee be adjourned? Does anyone want to speak to that notion? Does anyone want to speak against that notion? No? In which case, with my fondest thanks to you all for all of it, I think that this committee is adjourned and this meeting is too.
I'd pop
a bottle of champagne if I had it.
Yeah, Aubrey, just one thing. I assume the list won't go away, so to the extent...
No, Chuck, it won't.
It could be used to just give status updates to the people who are on the new GTLD committee.
Chuck, no, it won't, and I'll also be distributing the documentation and all the, you know, stuff about public comments and all that kind of thing, so no, it won't go away.
Good.
And Aubrey, it's Marilyn. I'm not on my own behalf, but I will say that probably those on the West Coast have found this a friendlier time zone, but perhaps Adrian might not have.
Yeah, it's a seesaw we have to play between the two extremes. Europe and the East Coast win out.
So yeah, and thankfully Adrian's spending his time in Dubai these days, so he doesn't mind so much.
So there's a good thing about Dubai.
Yes, well, that's one. I challenge you to find another.
Funny for me to even try. Okay, thank you all very much.
Thanks, Aubrey.
Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Funny, Aubrey.
Right.
Thank you.
All right.
Good night, everyone.
Bye. Bye.